Welcome, everyone, to Restoring Home, where we talk about marriage, parenting, and faith. And today, our guest is Kevin Hedrick. Welcome, Kevin, to
Hello, Steve.
This podcast. We are going to discuss something very, very important, and I've just been learning about this myself over the past, I don't know, a couple of weeks, although I've been concerned about it for a long time. And you and I were talking not too long ago about this and your involvement in these things. That's why I invited you on. But since I invited you, I've done a little digging, and it's amazing what is out there and what's happening and the need for this discussion and some of the resources we're going to share at the end that will be in the link associated with this episode of Restoring Home. And so what we're going to talk about, our topic today, is technology addiction. And a lot of families are out there and they're concerned about their children or their mates and their amount of time and energy that's being put into all sorts of technology issues. Specifically, I want to visit with you about gaming, about video games and its effect on you and what you've learned through dealing with that. And I'll share a few things that I've learned over the last few days looking into it myself. So first of all, tell us a little bit about you, Kevin. You're married, how many kids you have? Give everybody a little introduction to you.
My name's Kevin Hedrick. I'm married to my most wonderful wife for over a decade now. We've got five kids together, three girls, two boys, ages 9, 7, 5, 3, and 1. So it's been a real fun time with that. Okay.
And you have one on the way?
I've got one on the way as well.
Good. Great. All right. So you got a big family.
Yes, sir.
And this will be very important to you because, you know, they're growing up in an age where technology is accessible. It's very, very inexpensive. And if they don't have phones and video access to computers and such, their friends will. And so it's something we've got to be on our toes about as parents. So I want to ask you to give us, first of all, tell us your story about how technology addiction, about how video gaming specifically got into your life and what it did. So just tell us your story.
So when I was a kid growing up, I was born in the mid-80s, and around 1990, 91, I got my first first Nintendo gaming system. And at that time, you had Duck Hunt, you had Mario, motorbike games, things like that, and it was kind of fun. And as time goes on, you move on to the Sega Genesis and Super Nintendo and PlayStation 2 and Dreamcast and all the other stuff. So just spent my childhood playing games. Mm-hmm. When I was a kid below 10 years old, I used to get a dollar a week allowance for a whole list of chores I had to do. And I didn't spend money on much. And I remember walking to Sam's Club one time and having a video game, brand new game for the Sega Genesis on the shelf there. It was $60. And I said, you know, I have to have that game. It looks amazing. So I spent over a year's worth of savings to buy that video game. And I remember staying up all night with some of my friends. They'd come over. We'd have a sleepover or whatever. And we'd just spend hours mashing buttons back and forth to try to figure out what moves did these characters have. It was before the internets, before you had published information for that stuff. Mm-hmm. We just spent hours mashing buttons to figure out what can these characters do? And that's, you do that for weeks at a time. And, you know, as time goes on, you just become engrossed in these games. Mm-hmm. One of the thankful things at that time period is technology was not at the point where it was able to suck you in to the point that it is now. Mm. One of the biggest things I see now with so many of these games they have updates weekly on some of these games. And, mm-hmm. and a lot of these different gaming developers, instead of just an outer cartridge that you have and it stays static for its entire life, they update them weekly. They have teams of psychologists working on them, and they are just constantly changing everything they can in order to make these games have players come back more and more. Mm-hmm. And that's, thank goodness they didn't do that when I was a kid. And I kind of got out right when that was starting to take place.
Mm-hmm. Wow. So how were you when you first started?
I think 5 or 6 years old I started.
Right, 5 or 6, yeah. The first games I saw were Pong, which is two little white marks with a white ball going back and forth. It was very slow.
That's right.
And but we loved it. And then Pac-Man came along, which probably a lot of people don't know what Pac-Man is, but it was a little noisy game. You just played on a video arcade. You went into these rooms full. But I remember how video game arcades took off. people made a lot of money on those games, and kids would flock to those. You go to the mall, and the video game arcade room was full. Yeah. And when they went to the movie theaters, again, the game area, they had some in a room off to the side, and it was full of kids playing. But then along came the phones and the internet in general, and that it has exploded, the numbers of people being involved in it. And it's not just for kids. You would think that it's something that is for children, and that children would grow out of it, but it sounds to me like the video gaming industry has modified it and tweaked it so that it's something for big boys too.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And I know the first time that I heard a married woman bemoan the fact that her husband would come home from work, very responsible guy, Christian, very involved, a deacon in our church that I was at the time, and probably in his 40s, she was saddened by the fact that he came home from work and he went into his room where he had all his video game stuff, and he stayed there until even sometimes late in the night playing games against other men, some war game or some, with people around the world, I guess, who connected, and he was neglecting his duties with her. So tell us then, what are some of the negative outcomes that you experienced from the time you had the addiction?
So with me, you know, when I was 9 years ago, after I had my first daughter, there are several nights where you're a first-time parent, you have no idea what you're doing, mm-hmm. and you know, there's nights where you're just trying to get your baby to sleep, mm-hmm. and you realize there's a problem, and you're actually looking forward to those nights where she's not sleeping, because I'd have a baby wearer on, I'd be wearing my baby, I'd have a pink yoga ball I'd sit on, and I'd sit 8 foot in front of the television and sit down and play a Call of Duty video game. Hmm. And that was a strangely sweet relief to be able to try to bounce her to sleep, even if she's screaming, to be able to sit down and play this video game in solitude for a period of time. Mm-hmm. And if you're looking forward to your baby crying all night long to play a game, there might be a bigger issue taking place here, truly.
That's true. You know, I heard a podcast by Dr. Andrew Doane, D-O-E-N, and in fact, we're going to put a link after the video, this video down in the associated with this video, there will be some links to Dr. Doane's information, and he has a lot of terrific information and insight. Especially, he has some helps for parents who have children who are addicted or who are, he calls it, they have technology overuse, even if they may not necessarily have an addiction yet. And so he has some great material for them, and we'll link that. But he said, this shocked me when I heard it. I guess I had assumed it, but he said it, and he studies these things. So he says the pleasure centers in the brain that that porn and gaming trigger are identical to the pleasure centers where meth, cocaine, and alcohol light up the brain as well. So when they scan the brain, they're watching the brain light up in different areas based on what the person is experiencing. Porn and gaming light up exactly where meth and cocaine and alcohol light up. That ought to tell us something.
Yeah, that's a big list of a whole lot of bad things, Steve.
That's right.
You know, when I'm looking back at this time I spent playing you know, war games and fighting games and everything else, you know, it got to a point where if you're having a hard time spending time with your wife and, you know, spending your free time with your kids, it's, you know, if you can't do your responsibilities as a parent, that's an obstacle.
Yeah.
And that's when I started to really notice this was a major, major issue.
Mm-hmm.
You know, being newlywed, with bills, with babies and everything else, some of these gaming systems and games were getting more and more expensive.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, just making it more difficult to kind of keep up, you know, with these newest updates and these newest things. And it was kind of just becoming a bit of an issue.
Yeah. And that's an insight that that Dr. Doane also mentioned. He said the cost of gaming is the costs are loss of time and relationships.
Yep.
That's exactly what you were talking about. You don't fulfill your responsibilities with relationships with your wife, with your children, with others, and a loss of time. There's also a sense of, I would add to it, I think there's a sense of shame that comes, especially as a man gets older and he knows he should be caring for some responsibilities, but he doesn't. And he stays with his game longer. He excuses it with, well, I need a break. I need a little time away from work. I've got a heavy load. I'm feeling kind of tired. This helps me relax before I go to bed. It's really a lot similar to the same excuses that that people use for taking a few too many drinks to unwind and relax or to feel better, or they need a break, right? And so men walk away with a sense, it's not just men, but people walk away with a sense of shame of having not met their responsibilities or handled their relationships as they should, which is soothed by eventually going back in and getting that boost of, well, I know I've failed as a dad, but man, I'm crazy great at this character or whatever it is that I'm doing, right? It's not just men or boys. There are other, and it's not just gaming. Texting, Facebook, and all those sorts of games or activities, technology activities, also trigger those centers of the brain. You text and somebody texts right back. That immediate gratification is the same kind of thing of I shot the bullet on the game and it hit the target, right? Yep. So there's that sense of immediate, it worked, and you go for it again. So I text and they text back. Also, or they like things. So Facebook, you know, you put something out on Facebook, and so many people like it, thumbs up, that kind of thing. It's that same search for significance. And that's what Dr. Doan labeled something. He said it's the, I forgot exactly how he called it. It's like, it is the gaming of socialization. That's what has the industry has done. In fact, you mentioned there were professional psychiatrists or psychologists.
Yeah.
And those who actually put these things together because they understand how we think and they develop the game to connect with our thought mechanisms and processes.
Yeah.
And so it is the gaming of socialization and turning it into a game rather than real life interactions.
You know, it's funny, Steve, with phones. It's, you know, back in the day when you were a kid, you had a phone in the kitchen with a 20-foot long cord, and if you, you know, want to talk to someone, you got your phone and you walk around, and kids today have the phones too, but now there's a team of psychologists on the other end of Snapchats trying to figure out how to best make it where, you know, someone will go back and continue to check and do other things. I know Snapchat does streaks, and there's a lot of reports of kids when they go on vacation will actually give friends, you know, their passwords for Snapchat so they can keep streaks going while they're gone. Even though we had phones back when we were kids, it's not the same way as it is now.
Right.
With the video games, I could shoot ducks on Duck Hunt, and if I miss, the dog comes up and laughs at me, and it's the same thing over and over again. But now you're playing online with, you know, hundreds of thousands of people around the world having these interactions of real people that, you know, changes the experience and just adds another level of complexity and involvement with it that they never had before.
And I think the scriptures address this. Now, I know they didn't have video games back in Yeshua's time, but this way, this way of people is in there. It's in Ephesians. And it says that having lost all sensitivity, God gave them over to sensuality. And it says that they indulged themselves with a continual lust for more. And it's this, the duck game satisfies, but then it doesn't because it needs something faster, more elaborate, quicker, whatever, and then more graphic. And then another game comes, and these guys are tweaking it all the time so that more and more you need more and more stimulation. And so it's that sensuality, it's that sensual part of your child's mind or your mind that's being affected. And we should not give ourselves over, nor let our children give their minds over to sensual outlets, but to sensitivity to God. And so this is really a dangerous thing on a spiritual level. It has to be really monitored, or it can become quite debilitating and damaging to children.
Yeah.
Dr. Doan, in his material, talks a lot about how it actually affects the chemical, the brain makeup and the chemistry, the chemicals in the brain. And from a young age, children who are exposed to that, a lot of people hand over a game to their children to watch, mm-hmm. or they hand over to them as a babysitter, or they hand over to them even videos to watch that have the rapid changing scenes. And cartoons back in my day moved really slow. You know, one guy is, I can see Mickey Mouse, he's kind of whistling and bouncing along, and it's just kind of a slow song and kind of little thing. And nowadays, it's every scene. It's just, and that rewires the brain.
Yeah.
And our two-year-olds are watching that and we're actually harming them, thinking, well, here's an innocent little movie or cartoon for them to watch while I wash the dishes and do other things. They need other stimuli. So let me ask you a second story to tell us how you came to decide to overcome your addiction and exactly what you did. Now, you were bouncing with the daughter watching the video games.
Yeah.
What stirred? What happened?
So by the time I have kid number two, my oldest is 3-4 years old. Mm-hmm. Still trying to bounce with a new baby boy, trying to get him to just fall asleep. And like I said, a lot of these games are online and you have people from around the world that you're talking to, or in my case, just listening to. And the language coming out of some of the people's mouths is just obscene.
Mm-hmm.
Things I don't want spoken in my house, things mm-hmm. I certainly don't want to say in front mm-hmm. of my kids. I don't want them to expose to that. So I start playing with the volume down to nothing. And my wife walks in one day and says, what are you doing right now, Kevin? I said, I'm playing, you know, this video game. She said, you just shot a person in the head. I said, what's a video game? Your daughter just watched that. Mm-hmm. I said, well, maybe I should do it when she's not watching. Mm-hmm. And then I start thinking, if I need to hide my behavior from my children, mm-hmm. is this behavior that I should be demonstrating?
Mm-hmm.
If it's something that I don't want them to hear, if it's something I don't want them to see, and if it's something I have to kind of hide in the closet to go do, mm-hmm. that's a level of shame I probably should not be voluntarily putting myself
mm-hmm.
under.
Mm-hmm. That's true. You know, younger children, do not have the ability to differentiate between reality and non-reality. So when they see something on the screen of the phone or on the television, at a certain age, they think that that is as real as this glass of water is real. They don't see, they don't differentiate, and they also lack the ability to dissociate. In other words, they cannot separate themselves from that thing. They're as much in the screen as the characters on the screen are in the screen. And so your wife was right. When at a certain age, when they're young, they see someone hurt, shot on the screen, and it's as if you had taken them outside and watched a murder on the street.
Yeah.
The effect is the same because they can't dissociate from those nor differentiate. So it is really important that we're very careful with what our children are watching and what we're watching in front of them and listening to. So that started things. So let me ask you, if you were to give advice mm-hmm. now with your experience with all of this, if you were to give advice to the parents who are listening about the best policies for their children regarding video gaming, what would your advice to them be?
You know, I think the easiest kind of measure to see if there's a problem with video games in the house is if your kid's playing a video game and you walk up behind them and turn off the TV, what's their reaction? If they jump up and scream and yell, there's a solid chance there's an issue here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when a lot of kids I talk to, you know, I ask them, what are you doing when you get home from school today? Mm-hmm. I'm playing a game. I know a lot of parents said that they got phone calls from teachers this last year when they had hybrid schooling, when they were online part of the day, and teachers responded and said, hey, I could see your kid playing a video game in the reflection of their glasses, you know, while they're supposed to be sitting in class. You know, this might be a problem. I think that the biggest thing here is some of these games are fun.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a way for a lot of these kids to kind of, you know, reach out and have relationships with some of their friends because they do this together oftentimes.
Mm-hmm.
But like any type of parenting is, what are the pros and cons of this? You know, if this is something your kid can play for a little bit of, you know, time of day and set it down and walk mm-hmm. away and say, okay, I had mm-hmm. so much fun, I'm good. It's probably not a big deal, but mm-hmm. I think unfortunately that is the solid minority of the kids mm-hmm. and adults mm-hmm. that play these games anymore.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think, you know, from a spiritual point of view, is this an activity that's bringing me closer to God? Mm-hmm. Is this an activity as a parent that's bringing me closer to my kids? Is this an mm-hmm. activity that's bringing my kids closer to me? Mm-hmm. And there's probably some moderation there that can take place, but that is a, like many things, a very, very slippery slope mm-hmm. that I think we have to be so, so careful with.
Mm-hmm. Good. That's great. Yeah. If you take it away and they react, probably a sign that something needs to be attended to. Very great. A couple of items that I have heard from others that seems to be reasonable to me is that there's a need for limited time, age graded. And that doesn't mean they're 15, they have all day long. That means that even at 15, there's a limited time of exposure for video playing, especially when they're young, the younger, much more limited time, screen time, whether it's video games or just the screen. So there's limited time or measured amount of time. And then there's, also supervised. Yeah. So you know what they're watching at all times. And it's the kind of thing, like you said, that isn't defaming, that would honor God, that would not be something that you would not want them to see in real life. And that's the way I would suggest parents look at it, is would I want my children seeing this happening in our front yard? And if I would not want them to witness that in real life, then I would not think it's a good idea to put it on the screen. I know there will be, I anticipate that there are a lot of people who will push back against what we're suggesting here. And I would just say that that everyone should really reassess this one.
Yeah.
There were times when other things in our country were deemed not such a bad deal. Smoking was one when I was growing up. It's not a big deal. Everybody in the movies did it. A lot of Christians did it. A lot of people did it. It's not that big a deal. But, of course, we're finding out now. In our family, for example, my dad died of lung cancer from smoking. Mm. And so we now know there's danger associated with it. But it's a little bit late for some. And we don't want it to be too late for our children. And so I think wise parents will take really aggressive action to sit with their children, talk about these things, and set new parameters and make new decisions about how much they're going to allow their kids to be involved in both video gaming, but also in all social media interactions. Go ahead.
You know, I was going to say, with a lot of these games the kids have, they're based around violence because it gets a reaction, it gets you addicted. You know, all of the research we have right now says that empathy, that basic human caring aspect we have, when on social media, when online, when doing gaming, things like that, the parts of the brain that are associated with that empathy don't light up. They're not mm-hmm. active. Mm-hmm. So, you know, a lot of times when these kids are building, you know, building relationships mm-hmm. online with their friends, the part of their brain that deals with that doesn't even activate. Right. And that's, you know, concerning thing for those relationships and just, you know, how we think about one another.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one of the other concerns I'd have as a parent is, you know, once again, if my kid wants to have a relationship with someone, is this the best medium for mm-hmm. it, where mm-hmm. people are treating them in a way that is just so subpar mm-hmm. with that same lack of empathy?
Mm-hmm.
And that would be a major, major concern I would have as well.
Yeah, great, great point. Yeah, the social effect of this is enormous.
Yeah.
And I think we're just beginning to understand the effects of it.
You know, researchers back in the day used to think that, you know, with violent video games or TV shows, that if you watched a boxing match, for example, that was your outlet for kind of your aggressive energy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, through lots of research, they found out that watching these violent things, you know, playing the violent video games mm-hmm. is not a good outlet for that aggression that we have, that it actually amplifies it.
It increases, yeah.
And once again, it's one of those long-term things as a parent that you're mm-hmm. just teaching your kid that this mm-hmm. aggression is a good thing to build upon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Back when I was a kid, we didn't have the video games, but we would watch the football players on TV and wrestlers. We called them wrestlers down there in the South. So we would watch them on TV, and of course, it was pretty silly stuff that we watched with the wrestlers. But we'd watch football afterwards. Mm-hmm. What did all the boys want to do? Wanted to wrestle, or they wanted to run out and play football.
No.
It's powerful just watching the television. It makes us want what we've just been watching. So if it's aggression, it turns the switch.
No.
So last of all, let me just close by saying that one of the statistics that's alarming is that 1 in 11 children has a technology overuse or a gaming addiction. Mm. 1 in 11 in our country. That's a big number right there. And it doesn't mean that only 1 in 11 is using it. It means 1 in 11 is in trouble. And it's not just those who are outside of churches. It's in those who are in churches. And it's not including the adults. Yep. This is just the children. So we have a real issue here, and as wise parents, we'll pay attention to it. As godly people, we'll be on the front lines of helping people to think through these decisions so that they not addict themselves to sensual things, but sensitivities to God. And that's where we're supposed to spend our time as parents. So I'm glad you pulled away from that, and you're investing your energies in your wife. You're investing your energies in your kids in better ways. So
absolutely.
Good job on that. Thanks. And thanks for the time with us here today.
Thank you, Steve.
Okay. And for everyone else, there are some links and some resources that are terrific that we're going to put associated with this video and the information associated with it, especially some information from Dr. Andrew Doan, who has a website. And I cannot endorse everything on the website. I haven't seen it all. But what I have seen is very eye-opening. And that website is realbattle.org, realbattle.org. And you might go there to check out some of the information he has there. Again, I don't know Dr. Doan, and I'm not endorsing all of what he has, but some of what he has there is really helpful and enlightening for those who have children who are already in some form of addiction and to prevent others from getting into it. So until the next Restoring Home, may God bless us all that we'd be better in our marriages, at parenting, and demonstration and living of our faith.